Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
Hello, it is my pleasure to welcome Ali Brashear to the podcast. Welcome, Ali.
Hi, James. Nice to be here.
So, Ali, you have a master's in mechanical engineering with over 12 years' experience in maintenance reliability. You hold your CMRP, and you've worked with several manufacturing and energy clients around the world to develop and implement asset management programs, strategies, and procedures. Your experience includes working with boutique consulting firms, management consulting firms, EPC, and operating companies. You bring a wealth of knowledge and lessons learned when it comes to the implementation of asset management programs globally. Did I miss anything there?
Well, that pretty much summarizes my experience over the last 12 years. A lot of what I've seen has helped me understand how to improve on these asset management program implementations. So I think what you just said summarizes all my experience and I continue to learn a lot and provide that information to my clients as we go into different projects.
Absolutely. Now, where are you currently based at the moment?
I am currently based out of Calgary, Alberta. I'm helping a few energy clients here in terms of their asset management programs.
All right. And what got you started in maintenance, reliability, and asset management? What brought you down that road?
So it started really early in my career. So as I graduated from my master's program, I got into a company called DNV, Diagnostics Veritas. They're based out of Norway, and they specialize in reliability, process safety, QRAs. So that's where I initially started into the maintenance and reliability world. As an analyst, I was running a lot of RAM models, doing a lot of FMEAs, LCMs. Obviously, I started off as a scribe for most of these programs, and then as I grew into that role, I was leading a lot of these small assessments. So very, very early on in my career, I was into the maintenance and reliability world.
And when you talk about oil and gas, process safety, a lot of other aspects, and asset management in general, you start to hear a word called asset integrity. Now, what is asset integrity, and how important is it within asset management, maintenance, reliability?
So asset integrity is essentially the ability of an asset to perform its required function effectively and efficiently while safeguarding the life and the environment and assuring that the bottom line for an organization is met. I just want to expand the term asset integrity to include management systems and then call it asset integrity management systems. And what these management systems help us do is these activities ensure that the people, system, processes, and resources which deliver integrity are in place, in use, and fit for purpose over the whole life cycle of the asset. And the word life cycle here is critical because I think a lot of time that is missed when you talk about these programs.
Yeah, I think you touched on a couple of key points there, fit for purpose being one of them. It's not a one-size-fits-all when it comes to asset integrity. It depends highly upon the nature of the organization, the processes, and all those things. And I think that's very important and often overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes a lot of failures that I have seen has got these cookie-cutter maintenance management or asset management programs put in place without understanding the true requirements for the organization.
Yeah, and that's absolutely critical, is understanding the need, the issues, the risks, all those things to develop an appropriate strategy. Now, if an organization does all that properly, how does an asset integrity management system actually help that organization?
So the objective of an asset integrity management program is to maximize the returns on the asset while maintaining the stakeholder value and minimizing the business risks associated with accidents, loss of life, loss of production, and so on. So the asset integrity management program ensures that the assets, as you said, stay fit for the purpose, are operational, given all the circumstances that the asset may have in its life cycle. So at the end of the day, what it provides is it improves your safety, because a reliable plan is a safe plan. It improves your reliability, which means higher return on the assets. And it optimizes your maintenance and inspection initiatives. The key word here is optimize, because I've seen it go both ways. I've seen organizations do a lot more than what they need to do, and organizations that don't do enough. And there is an optimal piece in there where the asset management program typically would help identify for the organizations.
That's a good point. Doing more than that is required is a risk as well. You might introduce maintenance-induced failures. You might not have enough resources to go around and complete everything that must be done instead of doing all these other things. So I think you touched on a good point there. It's all about balancing the risks, costs, and performance of these assets.
Absolutely. And it's, all of that is different, as we've mentioned, for different organizations. They have different objectives, different goals. One of my mentors had previously said if an energy company could make more money selling pencils, they would do it. So at the end of the day, you have to keep in mind what the objective is, what the goal is, and then tailor your program to meet those objectives.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Now, when we talk about asset integrity management systems, does that apply to specific assets or specific asset classes, or is it every asset that an organization owns?
It's essentially all asset classes. Typically, what I've seen in the industry, that most people tend to associate the word integrity with fixed pressure equipment only. However, in my mind, asset integrity involves all asset classes. You may apply different methodologies for different asset classes, but the principle remains the same. You know, you have IBI methodologies for fixed pressure equipment. RCM is typically applicable to everything. And then there are some safety instrumented system methodologies that you apply to instrumentations as well. So in my opinion, asset integrity talks about all asset classes.
And I think that's important to note, because typically when I hear asset integrity, that's what I think of, is fixed pressure equipment. Don't think of everything else, but it's important to differentiate that, because while there might be a part in OSHA on mechanical integrity that does cover that those pressure vessels, asset integrity is everything in an organization, and we need to make sure we have the assets and they're able to deliver what needs to be delivered for the operation. And the only way to do that is to ensure the integrity of them. It's very important that you differentiated that. Now, what are some of the considerations that organizations need to think of when they start looking to implement an asset integrity management system?
What I have talked to my clients and to organizations that I've worked with is to have a holistic lifecycle approach to asset integrity management. If I had to put it in simple terms, there are four elements, at least in my opinion, that make up the requirements for the asset integrity system. These elements reflect the lifecycle approach. The four key elements that I would like to highlight here is the first one is the technical considerations. So the design, the construction, the configuration, vendor selections, the process conditions. I have been involved in a few major oil and gas project startups where the cost and the schedule often drive the design and the equipment selection. And the corporate specifications that are used are either they don't exist or are incomplete or not relevant to the project at hand. Basic reliability studies like reliability block diagrams and RAM studies and FMEAs are not done or done as a checkbox exercise. So what I've seen typically in that space is that reliability and integrity is often just an afterthought. The second piece I want to talk about is the preservation or maintenance consideration. When I use the word preservation, I'm talking about functional preservation. And most recently, over the last decade or so, we've seen a lot of effort put in this area where you're talking about developing PMs and inspection programs to preserve the function of the asset. However, we have to keep in mind that the function of the asset is determined by the technical requirements and technical considerations that I talked to just a little while ago, which depends on the design, configuration, materials, quality, etc. I have seen a lot of great papers, presentation, one block diagrams, pictures about what this preservation and maintenance activities should look like. So typically in this area, activities like criticality assessment, RCMs, RPI, operator general reliability, fitness for service, all of these are typically performed here. That doesn't necessarily mean this is the only place that it should be performed. Ideally, it should be performed during the technical considerations, so during the design phase. But most of the projects that I've worked on, it is performed after the design has been completed and then a facility is operating.
That's the wrong time to do a lot of this work. It's really hard to change that design once it's built and operating. It's much easier to change it in the design phase when it's still in CAD or any other type of design software.
And that goes back to my point that I made, that reliability and integrity during that phase is often just an afterthought. And it is mostly driven by project costs and schedules. What I think as an industry in the reliability and integrity profession, what we have struggled is to provide that business case or to say that we need to do that in the project phase rather than in the commissioning or startup or the operating phase. And that's where I think the biggest gap is. And as an industry, I think we need to move there. And I think we are getting there, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. It is vitally important, and it is taking time to get there, but it is critical that we do get there. And what is the third pillar then?
The third consideration is the operating consideration. So how are the assets being operated? Again, a key area that gets ignored or often overlooked is that operators need to understand the technical limitations and the operating parameters of the asset. If the design of the asset does not meet the requirement, it goes into an MOC, a management of change program. But more often than not, operators are driving the assets beyond their limitations to meet the requirements of the process. And that's where you run into problems, and that's where you have a lot of issues in terms of safety concerns, equipment failures, production loss, so on and so forth. I honestly believe that the operators are the owners of the asset at the end of the day. They will run these assets for decades. They need to understand completely through systems, through training, through procedures, what the limitations for these assets are and what these assets' functions are and how they are they intended to perform. The emphasis here is the importance of going back to that technical consideration where you, when you design the asset, you need to incorporate all possible scenarios for the process and take into account the reliability and integrity of the asset under those conditions. The last piece is the continuous improvement or feedback. And this is where the analytics come into play. Fundamentally, the two questions that I put forward to my clients and to the organizations that I work with is, are we doing the right things? The second question is, are we doing things right? They sound very similar, but they're fundamentally two very different questions. Doing the right things is basically, are we doing a bad actor analysis? Are we doing a reliability growth analysis? Are we doing RCFAs to eliminate the problems rather than just fixing problems on and on and on? The second piece is where the efficiency comes in, where we talk about, are we doing things right? So it talks about man hours, wrench time, planning and scheduling optimization. The whole maintenance and operation piece comes in here. And these two need to work together to provide a well-oiled machine, essentially. So in my opinion, this is the fundamental piece to sustain and improve the asset integrity programs and realize the value in the asset integrity management programs that more often I've seen leadership question the value of these programs because they don't tend to see this value. because this step is missing in their asset management programs.
Absolutely. And that is an excellent point, is oftentimes you see failure mode effect analysis, reliability center maintenance analysis completed, put in a nice binder, there's a bunch of motivation and hoorah behind it when it's first done. Then it goes on a shelf and it sits there very nicely and it never gets looked at again. Without that fourth consideration you mentioned, that continuous improvement loop, that is what will happen to an asset integrity management system. We need that feedback. We need that analytics to make it sustainable and delivering value to the business. Now, do you think that's where most organizations fall down when they do their asset integrity management system?
I think so. I think the implementation of RCMs at FMEA is an exhaustive undertaking. But what the organizations do is they often do it in either a panic mode, or it's initiated at a middle management level where it's somebody's project. And when that's done, it gets closed off and a checkbox gets associated. But there's no roadmap to say, okay, yes, you have done your RCM, you have done your FMEAs, what to do now? And what I've done with clients now is associated the FMEAs with the work history. And the technology is there, the softwares are there, millions of software. You'll find out that help you do that. But it is the process and the understanding that's missing, is how do we associate our work history or our equipment history to the FMEAs to validate it and improve it. Otherwise, the efforts done during the FMEA and the RCM projects are a loss. The strategies become irrelevant, the maintenance tasks become irrelevant, and you tend to lose value in those programs very quickly.
Yes, absolutely. You need to constantly go back, review, update, learn, and sustain it. And like you said, if there's no value being perceived by it, it will not be supported. So you need to have that data. You need to do that analysis to validate that it is making a difference and demonstrate that value. That's vitally important to any program you try and run in maintenance and reliability, whether it is RCM, asset integrity management systems, or anything else. You need to provide that value and demonstrate it.
Yeah, completely agree. And as you nailed it, most organizations fall there because they're missing this piece.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Now, with the importance of asset integrity and having a management system behind that, is it covered by any standards or best practice documents out there that someone could start to build one off of?
I mean, there's ISO 55000, PAS 55, and a few API standards, API standards, and ISO 14224 that covers what an asset management or asset integrity management program should look like. However, as we've pointed out, that these standards and best practices provide the framework or the skeleton of these programs. Each organization needs to develop its own roadmap and align with its corporate objectives. That's the key. These standards are just guidance documents. It's a good starting point, but you need to have your own vision and a roadmap.
Yeah, absolutely. It provides that framework. It causes you to, or those standards and documents cause you to ask the right questions, but you can't copy and paste. It needs to be built from scratch for your organization. I think we've touched on that a few times, but it's very important to reiterate that point. Often I see organizations just copy and they wonder why it doesn't work. So while the documents are there, use them as a framework, not as a copy and paste exercise. Now, with these documents that are out there, the ISO 55001, the API's risk-based inspection methodology, ISO 14224, are there any key aspects within those or any asset integrity management system that we need to make sure we include?
Like most management systems, there are a few key elements that need to be considered. Leadership is, I think, the most critical ones, because that's what will drive these programs. Governance, you know, one of my clients told me something several years ago, and it stuck to me, was show me that the people that I have are following the broken process, and then we can fix the process. So that statement itself highlights the importance of governance. You can put in the best systems, the best technology, the best work processes, but if you don't have the governance around those systems and those processes, they will be, as you said, binders sitting on somebody's shelf, and things will be status quo. So the governance piece is critical. Then you start getting into the actual delivery of the management system. So you're talking about policies, standards, and procedures. All of these, again, are documents and philosophies that need to align with the corporate objectives. So you cannot do something in isolation, where in isolation it may make perfect sense to go out and do certain things, but it doesn't meet the corporate objectives. So these documents and philosophies need to align themselves with what the corporate objectives are. Then you go down to work processes. These are processes that will define how you do work, from all the way from leadership down to the shop floor to the operators in the field. What are their entail? What's the day-to-day activity? What things are they supposed to do? How are they supposed to interact with each other? What value are they bringing from the day-to-day activities? What information they need to collect? All of these need to be documented in a work process. And this is very essential, because you can use these work processes to drive other activities like Lean Six Sigma activities, optimization, understand your resource requirements, understand why somebody does what that person does. So that's the work processes. Then you come down into systems and technologies, using the CMMS systems, using EAM softwares like Meridium or Isograph or Ivora, and then roles and responsibilities, again, goes back to this. Gets tied back into governance, performance management. This is, again, something that is often overlooked in the industry that I've worked over the last few years. In the energy industry, most of the time you are rewarded for a reactive culture. So if pump goes down and your production is out, and the maintenance and the operators go out there in the middle of the night to fix it, and instead of taking 12 hours, they took 6, they get rewarded for that. But we have to move away from that culture and ask the question, why did that pump fail when it did? So that's a big change, and it's hard to do. That change is hard to do. And the last piece, like any other management system, would be the continuous improvement piece. You got to keep improving your management systems.
Yep, absolutely. And governance is a huge piece of everything that happens. I'm working on a project around spare parts master data right now. And the only way I would actually accept this project is if there was a governance portion of the project to ensure that once we develop the standard and implement it, it would be followed. Because without that, you know, like you mentor mentioned, they can't follow the broken process. You know, they're not going to follow a good process. So, you know, governance is absolutely critical. It's what holds people accountable. It's what makes sure things are going. It's what makes things sustainable. So it's vitally important.
Yeah, and I recently came across a quote that says, culture will eat strategy for breakfast. And that stuck with me.
Absolutely. I've seen that one before, and I couldn't agree more. If your culture is not following processes, not holding each other and self accountable, then likelihood is, doesn't matter how nice you make that process, it won't be followed. So couldn't agree more. Now, we've talked about all these different pieces, but how does an organization go about actually implementing an asset integrity management system?
The fundamental requirement is for the implementation is the drive from leadership. We've talked about that a little bit. What I've seen a lot of time that asset integrity management systems are often initiated by middle management. However, the leadership needs to commit to the program, because it's not a project, it's a program. It's an ongoing thing. So there needs to be a commitment from the leadership to say, yes, this is the way we want to do things. There needs to be a roadmap of activities with value case at each gate. some of the key aspects that organizations need to have in place is, and it ties back to the management system, are the work processes and procedures to execute the required tasks. So maintenance strategies, defect elimination, production loss accounting. I'm surprised at a lot of places where the production loss accounting is done by the financial group, where they report losses. But that's just the starting point when it comes to asset management and asset integrity management programs. When you talk about production loss accounting, you need to associate that with events and process conditions on equipment. You need to be able to associate defect elimination activities against those losses. You need to historize those losses, and then that builds your bad actors. What I've seen is a lot of organizations miss that piece. Production loss for most organizations is, my target was 100,000, I produced 98,000, my loss is 10,000. And that's where it stops. So some of the other things, accountability and governance structures to ensure that the processes and procedures are being followed, performance management for people, process, technology, everything should come into a performance management framework. A systematic way to record failures, collect data, and have the ability to easily analyze the failures, so the work history, the RCFA programs, the defect elimination. All of these processes and governance structures needs to be in place. And to me, there needs to be a dedicated team that is responsible and accountable for these programs. It cannot be a part of a job description somewhere else.
It's all-encompassing. You need to have many different pieces in place to make it successful, and I think that's vitally important.
Absolutely.
So we've covered a lot on asset integrity management systems. Is there any other thoughts you have on asset integrity management systems that we didn't cover yet?
Yeah, I think a couple of things here. Don't treat the reliability and integrity as an afterthought. Embrace it like safety, for example. I think there's a significant shift in the safety side of things over the last few decades after a lot of accidents and incidents. So my thoughts or my advice is embrace reliability and integrity in the same way. A reliable plant is a safe plant. The other aspect of this is technology. I've often seen organizations try to throw technology into a people problem. My advice here is to fix your processes and people first. Technology will enable those processes. More often than not, I've seen technology where people should need to be fixed. Those are the two things that I would highlight here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You got to get your people right first, your processes right first. If not, technology will only allow you to make more mistakes faster. That's why most CMMS implementations fail to meet expectations, because they didn't address the processes or the people before they tried to implement a new CMMS, thinking that would solve the problem. Now, what is the one thing that you think makes the biggest difference in being successful with asset integrity?
We've talked about it, and I want to reiterate that as a culture. The governance, the accountability is the key to success. This, along with a practical work process, procedures, and standards, will drive the organization to success. To me, management systems and management program, whether it's asset integrity or any other management program, is about people. It's about people and processes. And how do we manage people is through effective governance.
I couldn't agree more. You got to get that right, or it doesn't matter what program you build, it will not be successful. And asset integrity management is no different. So if you had a magic wand and you could change one thing in regards to asset integrity that you see with organizations that you work with, what would that one thing be?
I would put that into data collection. Make sure you have a vision of what data needs to be collected, why you're collecting that data, and how are you going to use that data to drive results. That has been my message to everybody that I've worked with. You can collect tons of data and not make any decisions based off that, and you can collect very little data and make some good, sound decisions. So that's where I would change things, is to have this vision of what data needs to be collected, how is it going to be collected, how is it going to be consumed, and what decisions are we going to make using those data.
Yep, that's a very good point. We often have a lot of data, but we don't have enough information, or we can't decide what to do with that data. So having a data plan ahead of time is vitally important. What data do I need to collect? Who's going to collect it? When are they going to collect it? What am I going to do with it? It's all vitally important and a key part of any asset integrity management system, I think. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation today regarding asset integrity? What is the one thing they should go do after listening to this conversation?
Start now. Don't wait for something to happen. Don't wait for an incident or a fatality or a huge crash and loss to start your asset integrity management program. Start now, build a roadmap, get leadership to buy in, and make a commitment. Understand that this is a journey. Don't try to do everything together, because if you start in a panic mode, the expectation becomes exponentially high and you tend to do a lot more than what you need to without really understanding why. Understand it's a journey. Do what needs to be done now and have a roadmap to achieve different milestones. Create a vision, create a roadmap, and then stay committed to that roadmap.
Yep, very good. Develop your plan, stick to it, keep those milestones. But it is a long journey. It's not something that can be implemented overnight. Now, for those looking to implement this, feel free to reach out to myself, info@hpreliability.com, or on LinkedIn, to Allie, and feel free to ask questions. If you need help, contact us. We're there to help. We can provide you with what we've done in the past and help your organization move forward if that's what you want to do. But at minimum, if you have a question around asset integrity management systems, reach out to one of us and we'll do our best to get that answered for you and get you moving in the right direction. Now, Allie, where can people find out more about you? Are you at any events or activities coming up in the near future? I know you're active on LinkedIn, so I'll make sure to put your LinkedIn profile there and some of your good posts up as well in the show notes. But is there anything else you're up to at the moment?
I will be joining some of the CMRP conferences that will happen throughout the year. I have nothing planned as of now, but as you said, I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. I keep a fairly good network around the Alberta area, and I have a few clients that I'm working now with in the Middle East. But in terms of conferences, nothing planned yet, but hopefully I'll put something up soon on my LinkedIn profile, and we should be hopefully able to connect with some of our listeners and get more in touch.
All right, perfect. Like I said, I'll make sure to put your LinkedIn profile in the show notes so people can readily access that. And if you want to get in touch with either me or Allie or have a question, info@hpreliability.com. We'll be happy to answer any questions we can for you. Well, Allie, thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to have this conversation around asset integrity management systems with us. I don't think it's on the radar of a lot of organizations, and it should be. So hopefully our listeners took away a couple things that they can do and what they should start thinking about in regards to asset integrity. So thank you.
Thank you, James, for having us. It was great having this conversation. It's a passionate topic for me. I'll tell all the listeners is to start now. There's no better time than right now.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Thanks, Allie.
Thanks, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.